Graf Stone from Fox Sports.
This is Jochen Graf.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the bench!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce down. It's three in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of the Unused Substitutes podcast, live on Radio St. Pete, presented by Roughneck Scarves and part of the Beautiful Game Network. I am one half of this podcast crew. My name is Steven, and on the other end of the internet is Matt. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
We're back in our home locations after being at a totally unknown and unannounced location last week. So, Steven, actually, before we get to this, let me say our executive Patreon producer for this evening is Mr. Ryan Blank. Ryan, thank you for your ongoing contributions to the show. We appreciate it. Steven, how the heck have you been?
Let me tell you, I am tired, but I'm doing well.
Did you have a good time last Friday? Wait.
I'm glad we won. The stadium setup is still weird. It still doesn't feel right, but I'm glad we won.
I love it when the stands are full and the flags are waving and the mobs singing and people are yelling at the refs and the beer man and everybody else. But I honestly would almost pay twice the price of a regular ticket to go to a game with 150 people and listen to the coaches and the players and the referees all interact during the game. It's incredible stuff sometimes. It really, really is. Like, my favorite thing is that at various parts of Friday's game, either coach was telling the fourth official that the entire refereeing team was an embarrassment.
I mean, that's impressive. I mean, at least he's willing to throw the entire crew as a collective.
Both coaches. Charleston's coach at the very end, when they felt they should have been awarded a penalty, and Neil pretty early on.
It's funny because obviously when both coaches don't like the outcome of a refereeing decision of a game or in some way or capacity, that means you know you did it right. That's going to be the attitude of a referee. I mean, that's how they're going to look at it.
The best part is always one coach will start in on the referee and then the other coach wants to come to their defense because, you know, the call went their way. And then later on, how does the saying from the things from how the turntables have turned? All of a sudden, Charleston's coach is going after the referee and Neil's very silent. He's like, look, I don't have an issue with how that segment of the game was officiated.
As a referee, you're not surrounded by any friends. All you see are fickle allies.
True. Momentary allegiances. All right, so we're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about the standings. We're going to talk about games that are going on right now. We're going to talk about the game going on this weekend. But we do have some breaking news this afternoon. Nice of them to release it at give Lizzie her birthday wish. We're going to talk about Lizzie. And release some news on show day in time for us to discuss it, even though we were pretty well prepared to begin with. Steven, what's the news?
Well, the Tampa Bay Rowdies announced that we have a new midfielder. Hey, a midfielder. I'm just saying. Adam Najem, the brother of the other Najem, is now a Tampa Bay Rowdy as well. All because Poland isn't playing soccer, and so we needed a place to play, so we were able to wrangle him away. Which, if you follow the story, is actually a bit of a miracle, because his way of getting out of Poland was with an embassy flight, which is amazing, because that just feels very CIA-ish. I love it.
Yeah, like last flight out of the country.
Yeah, we just pulled a fast one on like the entire league, I feel. Like that was – it feels really cool to say that like that's how you got out and that's how you came over. Like that's awesome to me.
Like momentarily, I love it. Like just hours after apparently negotiating his way out of his contract because the second division in Poland had shut down, catches the last plane out. It is. It's very like I feel like this should be a deleted scene from Uncle Charlie's War.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
which is a fantastic movie. But that's kind of exactly what it felt like. So we've known about, you know, they've been hinting at it for a while. We've known about it. He was at the game Friday.
Yes.
And they were holding off on announcing it. And Jake goes into some really good detail in the article, and I'm going to link the article in the show notes as to why. So Adam's been back in the States for a while. When he got called to come down here, simply because he took a domestic flight, like inside the country. They gave him three separate COVID tests. Once when he landed, like that evening, that one came back clear. He did limited individual training at Al Lang the next day, which was that Friday. He came in on Thursday, trained individually at Al Lang on Friday, has been staying in a hotel by himself across from Al Lang. Took another test on, he had taken another test Friday. They got the results from that on Monday. Gave him another test Monday, which I think they got the results probably today. That's all on top of the typical international clearances for players moving from a country to another, even though he had been out of contract. All the typical stuff that holds up an announcement. How do you feel about this signing for filling a need?
I'm just saying I've been screaming for a midfielder this entire season so far, now granted, keeping in mind that Adam has historically played more as a central midfielder rather than an outside midfielder. But right. If you don't think you can make that transition, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sure you, I mean, that's a fairly easy one to make, I mean, especially in the context that we have two attacking midfielders already.
Right.
So, and I don't necessarily see a position where we technically need a third. Though, I mean, obviously, any amount of pressure is good in general. So, I'm not sure. I mean, I will say this. He's probably not going to play for a while. Only because, obviously, he's been training with the team for, all of like a day or two?
Yeah.
As a team activity. I think it's like literally one day, maybe. And again, he hasn't played a game in since I think he was with Memphis last year. Because I don't think he actually played. He didn't make an appearance with Suwalki because Suwalki didn't actually go into their season yet.
Yeah, he was so, training with the first team, like the starting group. But I don't believe maybe they had played like a friendly or a scrimmage or something, but they hadn't played any actual games.
Correct. So I don't. I would not envision a scenario where you see him right away. I would think that there's going to be at least a week to kind of build him into things a little bit. But I mean, I think for certain you'll see him by the end of the year. I mean, that's a quality USL player. By all accounts, mm-hmm. he's had a good career at the USL level. So there's no reason to say why he would not continue with that. So I think it's fair to say that you're going to see him at some point. I don't know if it would be against Miami, but it'll be fine. The question's going to be whether we actually play him as a 10. I mean, that to me is going to be the real question here.
Maybe not at first as they're working him into the lineup, but I think if he becomes a regular starter or makes regular appearances off the bench, I assume that's where he's going to play.
I mean, again, I would assume that too. But we're talking about no Lewis Hilton, and we're potentially talking about no Zach Steinberger. And I don't, it'll be interesting to see if you honestly think Adam Najem is better than those two guys as a center attacking mid. I don't know.
Yet another reason I'm glad to not have Neil Collins' job.
Although,
honestly, I at this point, I might take Neil Collins' job. I wouldn't be any good at it, but I might be willing to do it. all right. So Jake has an interview with him, talked to him earlier today. It's up on the site. We'll link to it in the show notes. Go and read it. I will say there are some pretty some pretty familiar names liking that article. Fafa Picault, Morgan Hackworth, Jochen Graf. Speaking of Jochen, he was at the game Friday. I spotted him. I feel like I'm doing like celebrity sightings now. Saw Jochen at the game. So I'm talking to Lakowecki afterwards. So that was kind of cool to see him back. I don't know if he was there on business or pleasure, but maybe mixing a little bit of both. So let's get to it. Talk about this game. Like we said coming up, this was going to be a big one. Kind of the first test of the restart, the first real test of the restart. I think I kind of expected this to be possibly a bigger test than Birmingham, although Birmingham turned out to be a 1-1 draw, and this ended in a 2-0 win for your Tampa Bay Rowdies. Good, bad, and ugly. Steven, give me your good.
All right, well, let's start with basically the obvious, right? Malik Johnson. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? God, have I missed him. I am so happy he's back, and I'm happy that he has not lost a step at all. I want to see more of that. We need more of that. We need that kind of dynamic into our offense. I wouldn't even call that a good. At this point, I'd call that a great. I mean, oh my God, everything about that.
Yeah,
that was my number one thing from this weekend.
There's a lot of attention on that goal as well. There should be. He put the defender just absolutely on skates. But moments before, he perfect pass for the assist, and Lakowecki's like 2 feet away from getting there in time to one time it into the net, which would have been the second goal right there. Second time around, a few moments later, just takes it on his own. Absolutely unbelievable. Like, looks fit. I don't know if he's 90 minutes fit yet to turn in that effort at the end of the game if he had started, but at this point, that's a hell of a sub to bring off the bench.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, like, that's what I was saying for a while now is I actually prefer that because it means that he's got more energy for the, you know, for the end of a game,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I've always held that opinion but then again, as a general soccer philosophy, I believe in the idea of super subs being a vital part of a team ethos, you know, so it doesn't bother me putting a really good player on the bench if you're going to have him on and be electrifying at the end of the game. That doesn't bother me at all. I know a lot of players don't like that idea and things like that for a multitude of reasons,
right.
But yeah, from a purely tactical standpoint, I love it. So it doesn't, I hope we see more of it. I didn't think Dalgaard performed poorly starting as the right mid during that game. He's certainly not as electrifying as Demboya, which is important because that was actually kind of something that we talked about last week. It turned out to be true, or the last show, was that Demboya is more aggressive than Dalgaard is. Not to say that Dalgaard isn't bad because he's got his strengths and he's fine as well. Right. I mean, obviously he made some great passes during the game. He made a couple of great passes in Birmingham for the limited minutes that he had. I would still take Demboya as the starter over him. And I would still put Malik as a late game sub. I think Dalgaard is more of the third wheel there, personally speaking.
Okay.
So it'll be, like I said, there it is. That's my opinion when it comes to those three. That's been fairly consistent, I think. But we'll, you know, we'll have to see what Neil decides going forward here, I think.
So my good, and I brought this up in the press conference and was promptly rewarded with a way of phrasing it, Matt, from Neil Collins. The mentality of the team, because we got into the second half, you know, the last game, the Birmingham game, he goes, you know, look, it's like the first 35, 40 minutes we were good, and then we kind of let off a little bit. And this time, it stretches into the second half, and he kind of gives him credit for the first, like, 55, 60 minutes. But then there's that lull, and you know, you felt it in the stands, too. Charleston started to kind of create some chances to build some momentum, to get some things going. But they had the mentality and possibly a little bit of luck to overcome that second half lull, get a second goal, and win this match. The first clean sheet at home, the first clean sheet since the restart. So to me, it was and this is going to tie into some of my man of the match thing, which may surprise some people, but I'm going to go with it.
Preview.
one of the things I asked him about after the game also was, there are a lot more, at least it's easier. I mean, it's obviously easier to hear it when there's nobody in the stands, but I think it's the case that there are some more vocal leaders, like players who are staking their spot as leaders on the field, as far as pointing out the guy, like telling which guys need to step it up, what to look out for, where they should be going. Praising them when the right thing happens, and we haven't had that in a little while, at least. I'm gonna save part of this for when I get to man of the match, but that to me was good to see that they are able to kind of overcome that lull and play a good enough defense to keep the ball out and eventually put one in on the other side and get the win. What's your bad?
Funny enough, because it kind of is a bit similar to yours. My thing happens to be with essentially defensive effort as a unit. Now, the reason why I mention this is, again, like, obviously we talk about the fact that Charleston kind of built into that game in the second half, obviously right up until the last 10 minutes when they went down to 10 men, because obviously that throws everything out the window. But like, for instance, they were pressing extremely hard on Dalgard in that second half. And that was an issue in the concept that we weren't pressuring as well as we could have been. We were giving space and options for them to exploit our gaps in the back. So they were playing long balls consistently because they kept getting success with that. That to me is a problem. We got the win 2-0. We probably should not have had a shutout.
No, and Neil says that in the press conference, and I thought it was a great line. He was like, look, we probably could have had one or two more, but at the same time, like, that they probably should have had one, at least one also.
Yeah, which is funny because here we are again 2 weeks in a row, and I'm feeling completely miffed about our score predictions this week, but we'll get to that in a second. But no, I mean, honestly, that game should have been 2-1 because they should have finished one of the few chances that they had in that second half, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, but here's the thing that I'll point out, and this is the reason why more or less this is my bad. That type of defensive effort where you're giving up that many quality chances. And again, we did the same thing with Birmingham. Loros saved a one-on-one against Birmingham as well that would have put that game at 2-0 and maybe out of reach of at least a point. Where we – and I don't know if this is necessarily a system issue or if this is just a players being lax issue. And I want to say this is more of a players just – missing their marks and missing cues and things like that rather than the system as a whole. But right now, our defensive effort is preventing us from being considered elite right now. I know that, like, for instance, the USL, the guys that run the USL website, they technically say that we're like the second best team in the whole league on that, you know, whatever way the wind blows power ranking system that they use. But I don't think we're anywhere near that right now. I mean, I think we're probably closer to like maybe seventh or eighth. Okay. And I know that sounds harsh for a team that's undefeated, but the fact is that we've gotten really lucky. And if it wasn't for a lot of heroics by Lauro, we would not be in the position that we're in. And I don't think that's something that's sustainable. It's funny because here I am, we're talking about, you know, things that are bad about an individual game. And here I'm opining about the entire season as a whole in our future. But, you know, I mean,
my bad. Again, the second half lull, it's two games in a row now we've seen this happen. I don't know if it's just a result of rust, you know, knocking the rust off, getting back into to playing shape, whether it's, you know, the actual atmosphere or I don't want to say lack, because it's not there's lacking for, but it's different. 150 versus usually 5,000-6,000, or it's some combination of it. I don't know. But if it's that, they might have to find a way to keep working through that, you know, for the foreseeable future until we know what's going to happen as far as who's going to be allowed in and what for these games. I'm going to go ahead and throw my ugly out there, because your ugly segment's going to take a lot more time than mine. In a game like this, where it's basically a 6-pointer when you're playing the team right beneath you and you scrap your way to a 2-0 win, I'm not calling the damn thing ugly. Even if it is, it's so ugly, it's beautiful. A lot like me. So I'm going to say nothing. Steven, you definitely saw something you did not care for.
Well, and I would think it'd be safe to say that I wasn't the only one that saw it, because even as a sub, he got subbed out. And that is Jan Ekeroth. He looked horribly rusty for whatever reason that was. He was thoroughly off of his game. I mean, in the minutes that he played, and I don't know if it was, I honestly believe that he was taken off because of how poorly he was going. He had a couple of turnovers in the few minutes that he played that were almost costly as far as the game. I mean, he only put in, what, 24 minutes
something
in that,
like that
game?
And that's that. I was going to bring that up because I wasn't really focusing a lot on him specifically to see. Like apparently not, because nothing really jumped out to me. My assumption when he came off was, because he came off after the red card, and we brought mm-hmm. him off and brought another attacker off and put two attackers on, and I thought it was Neil adjusting to the situation and kind of going for the kill, going for the second goal, and it might be a combination of it. You know, if he is rusty, then, you know, good time to go ahead and get him off, and you can kind of give him cover that way and chalk it up to, well, they went down to 10 men and we saw an advantage to seal the 3 points and went for it. But
let me give you a reason why I think this is actually more of a performance issue as far as with and the reason why Jan Ekeroth came out. He touched the ball in 24 minutes as an attacking midfielder, center attacking mid. He touched the ball, what, 15 times maybe? I mean, to give you a concept, he had 3 successful pets and 1 unsuccessful pass. That's it. That's his entire passing cumulative number in 24 minutes as a center attacking midfielder. 4 pass attempts.
That's not really a lot.
No, it isn't. He also gave up a bad foul. He failed on a dribble. He had, what, 2 interceptions, I believe, and I think there's 1 other stat here. And quite honestly, for a player coming in as a sub, you're looking for more higher energy than that. And to just not, I mean, that's just not cutting it. I honestly think that he was taken out not for tactical reasons. I think it was performance, because he was outright bad. I mean, he had a couple of bad giveaways. And some of that is just the concept that he wasn't doing a very good job closing down and successfully defending and trying to intercept or at least tackle on Charleston players. There was a couple times where some Charleston players just blew right by him.
Right.
And, like, that's unacceptable if you're a substitute. So hopefully that's just a 1-game weird thing that thankfully, because of five substitutions, we can get away with right now.
Right.
I mean, because I kind of shudder to think of the idea of if we have only three subs and Ekra pulls in a performance like that and he has to actually finish the rest of that half. That kind of scares me a little bit. If like he needs to be better than that, period. Like, and he has been. That's the thing. Like, it's not like this is a consistent problem with him. Yeah, Ekra's been great.
Yeah.
But that was bad. That is an individual as a snapshot, 24 minutes of soccer of his soccer career. That was ugly.
So I don't know if you looked at it. I know Jake mentioned it and a couple of other people voiced it. And I did a screenshot of some of the stat things. But Doherty had a fantastic game as far as his pass completion. And only, I think, one or two of the passes were even going backwards. Most of the stuff he's spreading out to the wing. Is Doherty's game a result of, you know, Ekra comes in for Hilton, is it a result of them not playing as well, or does Ekra end up looking bad because of how well Doherty was playing?
So this is interesting, because Doherty, to me, is an enigma of sorts. Now, here's the reason why I say this. I'll explain this. Do you remember what my comments about Doherty as a player were last year?
No.
I don't
remember what
kidding.
I ate for lunch yesterday. Be honest.
I'm not important enough to remember, so it's okay. But no, my thing with Doherty, and this was always the thing that concerned me when I saw him come on the field and get paired up with Dominic Adoro. Jordan is a relentlessly conservative player when it comes to his passing. He does not play the ball up the field almost ever. I'm not talking down the middle. I'm talking even like towards the corners. He doesn't do it. That's not his game style. That's not his gameplay. It never has been. That was one of the things that I said that he needed to improve on, because the problem is that in the system that we play, we cannot afford to have two center defensive midfielders, because Dom Adoro, I think, is a better player than Jordan Doherty is. I think there's more upside, and I mean this in the context of upside, because I think Adoro is a more offensive threat in general, like as an individual player, like when it comes to his shooting ability, for example. Mm-hmm. But I also think Adoro can be a bit more aggressive at times. Doherty does not be aggressive ever about anything. And it's funny, because the one moment where he shows, okay, let's try something different, it's an assist. He feeds Guizzi, and Guizzi scores on his 3-year anniversary. I want more of that from him. And that's always been my complaint about Doherty as a whole. And I think that's something that I'm not going to say he's a bad player, because he isn't. It's just that if you're looking for two defensive midfielders, then you put Adoro and Doherty on the field together. That's the way to go.
Okay.
I would not do that every single game. I don't think that's a recipe for success, because I don't think Doherty's aggressive enough to actually make a good pairing with Adoro. That's something I said time and time again last year. The reason for that is because last year I believed our best three midfielders were Andrew Tenari up top, Adoro as one of the defensive mids, and Poku as the other one. Because Doherty pretty much only ever made an appearance when Poku was not making an appearance. And if you think about it, what's the reason for that? Poku was a much more offensive threat.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, I don't know if the solution to this per se is essentially the idea of like Jan Ekra replacing Doherty in the long run. I don't know if that's necessarily the scenario involved here, because I think Ekra plays more up top in general, or maybe it's Ekra plays as the number 10 and Hilton slides back, because Hilton has a bit more flexibility going up forwards. But as much as I love Doherty, he needs to be more aggressive in an attacking way. I love the fact that he has always been a really consistent passer. He's always been consistent, you know, to a certain point defensively. He's not enough of an offensive threat. You saw one brief flashing brilliance of that on the through ball to Guizzi. Do it more, please. I want to believe in you as a 90-minute starter. Yeah, you need to do that more often. That was my criticism last year. It was my criticism going into this year. And he's kind of doing it again, but he's proven he has the ability to evolve. And I hope he evolves his game because he's still a child. I mean, come on. He's a kid. So I hope he continues to grow in that. That's my thing with him.
All right. Let's move on. The Rowdy starting 11 versus our prediction / expectation. The only thing, and we mentioned it earlier, it kind of stood out, was Dalgaard getting the start. Was it his first start, or did he start the New York game?
No, that's his first start.
It's first start, and Dumbuya was dropped completely. He was at stadium in street clothes, but was not in the lineup or on the bench. Anything else stand out to you from the lineup?
No, other than that, it's pretty much a Rowdy's lineup at the moment. There's nothing, as far as that game is concerned, it's about what we expected and probably what realistically should be there.
Okay. as far as what we saw from the opposition, you know, the one thing that we kind of mentioned last week, and maybe this means they were listening to us, is that you needed to stop Lewis. He was the main offensive threat. The most shots, the most goals, tied for the most assists, creating chances. His stats on the night, no shots, 3 chances created, and he was subbed off in like the 66th minute. Like, you know, it's still 1-0 at that point, and they're still kind of in the game. And I was kind of surprised when they took him off at that point. But he had really contributed very little to the team in the entire game. That I guess they decided to go with somebody else. And then the red card happened a little while afterwards, and like 15 minutes later, and it was all done but the whistle at that point.
Mm-hmm. And that comes down to players like Doherty, players like Aduro shutting him down. I mean, he is their creative threat, and it's going to, and especially in the middle of the field, it's going to be Oduro's and Doherty's responsibility in that game. I thought they did a fantastic job to that.
Yeah.
I mean, those two players make a great defensive midfield setup. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Seems like there was a concerted effort to try and take him out of the game. If you look at the stats, there's a lot of other shots, mostly by Zarakostas. Luckily, none went in. To try and make up for that. So let's get to man of the match. I'm going to give you a first shot.
My man of the match for the night has to be the man that scored a goal on his third year literal anniversary of signing. So I'm definitely going to be giving this to Sebastian Gonzatti.
I was expecting you to take up more time. I was trying to eat some food there real quick.
Come on, man. We're doing it live.
This is the real reason I don't have the camera tonight.
Yeah, there it is.
So this is going to be a little bit out of left field. You know, Gonzatti has the game winner. It wakes everybody up. It gets the team going. It gets the fans going. Malik had the run, the shot. I love a goal that goes far post, hits the back, and then pops up to the back of the net like it's, you know, it just been rung up like that. My man of the match is Forrest Lasso. And it's going to touch back to some of the reasons that are actually in your bad. Nine clearances on the night. He shouldn't have to make 9 clearances, but he did. He's the Al Lang lumberjack now. He's the St. Pete Paul
absolutely.
Bunyan. But he's what I'm referring to. His constant communication with the other players, telling them where they need to improve, shouting them out when they do, imploring them to wake the heck up, though it wasn't heck. you know, when that lull kind of sets in, he's on him, and he's like, we're not doing this again. We're not giving this up, and we're not gonna let them get back into it. Just nonstop. And when I was talking to Neil post game, I said. And I think he got the joke, is I can't remember the last time we had a center back so willing to share his own opinion on the progress of the game. I don't know who that could have been. Oh, wait, Neil Collins. That, you know, he doesn't score the goal. He doesn't get an assist. He doesn't show up in the offensive stats, really. But I don't think without the job he put in on and off the ball, especially in the second half, I don't know that that's 2-0 or it's not, or it's 1-1.
So one thing that's interesting about Forrest's stats from that game is that he did not have an incomplete pass or a success. Yeah, I guess unsuccessful pass, I guess, is the soccer terminology. But he did not have an unsuccessful pass in the second half of that game at all.
Yeah, I mean, he was just on it the whole time. And doing that while he's shouting out the other players and getting them going. So you've got Seba. I've got Forrest. Let's give them a hand. And we'll say both job well done. The Miami FC, it's not your NASL grandfather's Miami FC. It's the same name. It's the same logo. It's nowhere near the amount of money being spent. Don't get your mind clouded by memories of yesteryear. Steven, tell us about the current Miami FC.
Which is funny because this is actually going to be really similar to how we, went over this show and these exact notes when we almost played them earlier this year. They are coached by Nelson Vargas, first year manager officially. He did play for the Tampa Bay Mutiny briefly in his playing career. Of course, when we travel to Miami, we're going to be playing at Ricardo Silva Stadium, which of course several of you have been to. When it comes to stats leaders, goals, Romario Williams has a pair of goals on the year. Assists, Harrison Heath has a single assist. Romario Williams also leads the team in shots overall with 5. And when it comes to chances, Harrison Heath and Sebastian Velasquez both have 3 each. Their goalkeeper, Brian Sylvester, with 2 appearances and 12 saves, God bless his soul, has given up 8 goals. That poor man.
So
to a certain degree, I do sympathize because that sucks.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, some of those are just dreadful errors.
That's
going
to say, I haven't watched a ton of them. I know we watched part of that loss to Atlanta last week while we were at the undisclosed location. How much of that is on the back line? How much of that is on Sylvester?
I want to say that of the 8 goals he's conceded, you could very easily probably say half of those are on him at a minimum.
I'll take that.
I'll
take a 50-50 chance right there. So there's some really familiar names here. Romario Williams, we've encountered several times before, has been a goal-scoring threat. Sebastian Velasquez was in the Western Conference last year with El Paso, was a pretty significant player for them, was hoping to get a move to, I believe, South America in the offseason, didn't quite work out, came back and signed on with Miami. Sylvester is a goalie we've faced before. I want to say with like North Carolina, possibly. One other familiar name, their captain, former Rowdy, recent Rowdy. I guess maybe that's how we could decide between like the old school Rowdies and the current one. Instead of modern era, we're just calling recent Rowdies. Captain Lance Roseboom. What about their system? What's their formation? What do they look like usually?
So one of the things that we were talking about, especially when it comes to teams like Miami, was how the break was going to affect teams when it comes to building cohesion. So in the 2 games that they've played, Nelson Vargas has implemented a 4-1-4-1 system. Here's the thing, though. They've basically recycled like the entire lineup from the game that they played in March to this first game back here in July. It's like an entirely different roster at this point. So 4 players overall that were on the game day roster in some capacity in March were not present at all here in July. And only 2 players have officially played all 180 plus minutes of the season so far for Miami. They have either started or subbed off everybody else on the team. So I think that's interesting because it definitely shows, especially considering that they lost to Atlanta 4-3, that definitely shows that they have not solved their cohesion issues yet, that this break did not help them at all, because that was something we were all kind of wondering and speculating about. That Vargas is willing to completely change the game day roster and player assignments from the game in March to this one shows that he's trying to change things, that obviously he saw some things against St. Louis that weren't working from a player personnel standpoint, but my goodness, to come out with that revamped, basically that revamped roster and then get demolished again, because I'm going to say a 4-3 game when you're up a man is embarrassing. I mean, it is, especially against a bad team.
And they led early on in that one too, I want to say, right? It was 1-0 or 2-1 at some point.
Yes, and Atlanta did a really good job of coming right back and scoring within minutes. I mean, they were very consistent about that. So to their credit, I will grant them that. The thing that has me worried, though, is that is it really a switch? Is it a tactical issue, or is it just a mental switch issue? Because some of the players that you saw during that game against Atlanta really just were not – It didn't look like they were really present for those games. They weren't making very obviously good decisions. A lot of them were kind of walking around at times, even with a man advantage. It just didn't feel like they were into the game yet. And I think that's the thing that's important, is that I can't take that result to heart, as much as it's funny. I don't think that that game is much of a commentary on them, because they still put in 3 goals offensively. So, and they didn't get shut out, and they didn't get shut out against St. Louis, and they actually had a couple of decent chances against St. Louis in general. So I would be weary of anybody saying that we should just smoke them, because if, first of all, we haven't had a great history in Ricardo Silva Stadium, unfortunately. So I really wouldn't necessarily go into this game with tons of confidence because of that, because if they do flick that switch, they have the talent to compete at this level. I mean, they've got solid USL players across the lineup. So if they can kind of turn that on, they could be a team to compete. And I think and most people consider them to be a team that will compete by the end of the year. Granted, a 16 game season doesn't do them any favors compared to a regular, 34 game slate. So maybe that ends up working against them in that narrative, but I would not walk into this game with a ton of confidence. Just as far as, I don't think we're going to go in there and beat them 6-0. I mean, obviously, it's the Rowdies. We're probably not going to do that anyways against anybody, but I don't think a full 3 is just guaranteed walking into that stadium.
All right, so what's your prediction?
My official prediction for this game is going to be 1-1. And I'm really leaning heavily on past results in that building as kind of a playing a part into that result. So we'll have to see what happens there. But I mean, it's still a turf field, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll have to see how that kind of plays out a bit.
You still have that Open Cup game in mind, don't you?
It's hard to forget it when you were there.
All right. Before I give my prediction, let's talk about our predictions last week, because I don't think we did that part. You predicted a 2-1 win over Charleston. I predicted a 3-0 win. I got their goals right. You got our goals right. Once again, we have combined like the worst Voltron ever to come up with the right result and score line. So I'm going to give us a hand. Because because we're pretty good. Honestly, we could have had three goals. They probably should have had one goal. So I there's another way you could combine that. It's just like exactly like Neil said. Like, that was a game where both sides should have had more. I still think the win for us against Charleston was the right result overall in terms of the overall run of play. But this week, Stephen, how many goals did St. Louis score against Miami?
Four.
Stephen, how many goals did Atlanta score against Miami?
Four would be the answer you're looking for.
The Rowdies are going to win this 4-1.
How bold of you, sir.
4-1. If we don't score four goals, fire everybody. Fire everybody.
I will say this. Because Sylvester has had a bad start to this season in 2020, if the Rowdies aren't taking shots from distance, I will get very mad. I will get very, very mad and upset and probably throw things, maybe hit something inanimate.
I'll because, say 4-1.
Because, oh my God, he's terrible. Like, right now, yeah. He is not playing good. Take shots. Shoot from distance. Just challenge him a little bit because, oh man, the dude's leakier than a faucet.
Not just take shots from distance, but do it early. Because if you can get to him early, you're going to keep attacking that dwindling confidence level. You give him a shutout half, he's going to feel good in the second half. We don't need that.
And follow up on everything. This is a game I honestly think that Juan Tejada should score in just from the fact that Sylvester does not collect the ball very well and doesn't judge, crosses very well. And it's just not been good at all to begin with almost anything for these two games. This is a game that Tejada should probably score a goal in. Like, this is something that's like built for him.
We just need to take a recording or possibly sneak in the fan at Al Lang who shouted right at the end of the national anthem, "Take a shot from outside, boys."
Exactly.
I was a big fan of that. Timed it perfectly. 4-1, but I will qualify that as saying it's dependent on scoring early. If we score early, I think the floodgates can open. If you give them a half of clean sheet, it could be a 1-0 or a 1-1. It's just going to depend on the situation.
And, of course, piggybacking off of that, my prediction for this week officially is a 1-1 result.
All right.
And I'm not convinced this offense or this defense has solved all of its idiosyncrasies, if you want to just use a word. This is a Miami team that can score goals. So, and we're on turf, and the turf curse sucks. And
New York was on turf and we won. So I'm taking it. Birmingham, I think, is grass.
I'm just playing the laws of averages right now.
I mean, Miami has to get a result at some point. And like I said, they've been very unlucky. And they're not good enough to be as unlucky as they have been. So at some point, these turntables are also going to turn. I'm just going to keep using that reference. I just hope it's not this Friday. It's closed doors, no home fans, no away fans. It'll be on TV. Where and when, Steven?
So the important thing about this is they did make a slight alteration, and it got bumped up about a half an hour, so the game kicks off at 7 p.m. Do not forget that.
Sounds good.
Accidentally mistaken that.
ESPN Plus it. Just saying. This Saturday, Birmingham is going to host Atlanta, and Louisville's going to host Indy. That's going to be an interesting matchup. Indy looks to be as good as everyone thinks they are. Louisville's looking to turn things around. Now, it's at Louisville, which has so far not been a good sign for Louisville. But they're both of these teams coming off pretty surprising losses, home losses, to the aforementioned SKC. So we'll see how this shapes up for them. All right, we need to kind of wrap this up. We're talking tonight. Rowdy's Gaming Update. I know there was the EUSL matchup, the final regular season, and we're heading to the playoffs. Who is Carlos going to conquer next?
Yes. So they did announce what the lineup is going to be. He is going to take on somebody that he hasn't played this year, because obviously they did have the Xbox players and PlayStation players separated because of obviously the servers, they don't coordinate. And there was so many players that they had like an Eastern and a Western conference. So Carlos will be playing the sixth seed out of the West. That is going to be at NIIAOSW. I don't know what that actually stands for. NIIAOSW. I couldn't tell you. But that being said, that is the thing. I don't have a specific time yet for that game. I don't know specifically what it is. Obviously, keep a watch on my own Twitter. Watch Carlos's Twitter. Watch the Rowdy's Gaming Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll update that as soon as possible. But that is the matchup that he's in. Now, here's the thing. When it comes to predicting how this is going to play out in the end, that really sucks to be Carlos. He's on the same side of the bracket with Coach Smith.
Ooh. So hope for an upset maybe early in the bracket.
Yeah. Yeah, Carlos would have to win two games, and Coach Smith will have to win two games, and they would meet in the third in the playoff bracket. But Carlos has to go through him to get into the final. So that is unfortunate. That really sucks. If we're being honest, that really, really, really sucks. But it kind of is what it is. We'll have to take that and see, and hopefully it doesn't completely bite us in the butt. But at the moment, that's the kind of how the cookie crumbled.
All right, so let's take this out of here. I think we're going to be on the same page for the next part. Are we love yous, Steven? I'm gonna let you lead off.
You say we're on the same page. I don't know. My we love you. Actually,
if you've been on Twitter today, I think you were on the same page.
Yeah, darn it, Lizzie. I love you. We all love you. Happy birthday. You do not, you look amazing, and I love it, and I wish that you were at games. Obviously, we know why you're not, and it makes sense, and I don't, obviously, the circumstances suck, but, oh, we love you, Lizzie.
Giant hamster bubble with a fan, we can make this work. since I know we have some new listeners who may not be aware, Lizzie turned 93 today, and Lizzie has been a fan of the Rowdies organization going back to the original days when I was but a baby in the 70s and 80s. And all you need to know is that when the Rowdies tweeted out that Lizzie is a Rowdies legend, Rodney Marsh himself retweeted it and said, "Yes, she is." And there's some urban legends going around that she may or may not have been involved in, that are interesting stories. We'll talk about them later. But yes,
Lizzie's amazing.
She's fantastic. Happy birthday, Lizzie.
And you know what? She's up in that section every single game, singing songs and front rowing the whole supporter experience. And if the rest of you aren't singing songs and doing your stuff up in a supporter section, then you're all a bunch of
candy pansies up there. My other favorite thing is that she always parks near where Skyway does their tailgating. Mm-hmm. So we see her when she arrives, and she makes a beeline, and she's like, "Where's the beer?"
Yeah.
"Where's the beer?" Love Lizzie.
Yep.
All right, so in addition to Lizzie, my we love you, I'm going to throw one out to a friend and supporter, a financial supporter, Adam Martin. His birthday was earlier this week. Adam, I'm going to pretend it's not a coincidence that I ate Publix meatloaf tonight. It's one of my favorite things you get in the store with some spicy ketchup on it. Good stuff. So happy birthday, Adam. And also, in addition to it being Lizzie's birthday today, it's my mom's birthday. So,
aww.
So we love you to her. Also been stuck at home for a while now because of everything going on, just like all of us. So shout out to Lizzie and Adam and my mom. Way to go. All right, let's get out of here.
We want to say thank you to Wolfface for providing our intro music, Radio St. Pete for giving us a platform to do this live from, and of course, Shamrock, which is absolutely in no way and under any circumstances our secret bunker location for the pandemic, but maybe.
Thanks to you guys, everyone listening in live tonight, listening later on the podcast. Thank you to you guys for continuing to share, subscribe, rate, and review. Find room for us in your daily routines, weekly routines. We appreciate it. If you'd like to take that a step farther, Steven, tell them what they can do.
Patreon. We do have one. It exists, and it's awesome. If you do want to do more than just listen to and sharing our podcast, please consider being a sponsor of ours on Patreon. We do a donation system on that. That's what the system's built for. You could go as low as a dollar a month. It helps us pay the bills for the website and for the radio podcasting. So that way, not everything is coming out of the pockets of us as individuals. So we do appreciate you guys helping us share that burden.
And we also use it sometimes to support some, you know, if there's a GoFundMe for, like with Christy Morgan's GoFundMe. The Rowdies and several players have been tweeting about a virtual lemonade stand hosted by two childhood cancer survivors coming up this weekend. I believe I'm going to make a donation from Pod Money there to support that, because that seems like an incredibly worthy cause. Yes. It all kind of goes to that stuff as well, too. Thank you also to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com.
And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates that are provided from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for something unique, completely custom for your youth club, Sunday league squad, maybe even an adult or pro team, Icarus FC can help you with creating the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com.
Thank you guys for listening.
Go Rowdies. Win at Miami. Let's get it done.
Get it done 4-1.
The Rowdies went here, the Rowdies went there, they kicked the ball around. The Rowdies went here, the Rowdies went there.